presented by James Townsend.
One of the regular conversations into which a history graduate can often become embroiled could be titled with the question, what is the point of history? Well, there is, of course, a considerable case to be made for the art, and if anybody should wish to ply me with the necessary beer, I would be happy to outline my interpretation of it. However, for now, I would like to consider a small byproduct of remembering the great stories of nations, anniversaries. This week marked the 70th anniversary of General Charles de Gaulle addressing the French nation from the BBC in London. Anniversaries are always an opportunity to learn something new about a moment in history, and in particular, why that moment is chosen to be remembered over any other. Well, in this case, the French have chosen very carefully. The Second World War is not an uninterrupted tapestry of glorious moments for the French. In this anniversary, they choose not to highlight the wretched moment when Marshal Pétain capitulated to the Nazis, handing over France to Hitler's dominating agenda. Instead, the French prefer to mark the moment a few days later, when General de Gaulle roused the spirits of the nation. He positioned himself as leader of a government in exile and announced the start of the resistance movement. "France will overcome," was his message. And it is that ebullient sentiment that President Sarkozy arrived in London on Friday to celebrate. The story of de Gaulle's speech from Broadcasting House tells us a great deal about the political situation in 1940. The BBC, ever conscious of its obligation to remain independent from government, a voice of authority and integrity, was deeply opposed to handing over its esteemed microphone to a foreign leader with such an overtly political message as de Gaulle. Now, any story of the Second World War must, by rights, include a crucial and recurring character, Winston Leonard Spencer Churchill. In this story, Churchill is as rumbustious as ever. He had formed a close, if rather turbulent, relationship with General de Gaulle, and Churchill appears to have seen that British interests lay firmly in nurturing the French general's efforts at home. To this end, Churchill gave a direct instruction to the Director General that de Gaulle be allowed his airtime. The BBC eventually relented and granted the French general a single hour for him to make his speech. Now, de Gaulle was not a man of slow wit, and he managed to double his allotted time simply by ending his speech, "I will address you all again tomorrow." The many stories of heroism, determination, and bravery that characterized the French resistance were all inspired in some way by de Gaulle's gifted use of persuasion through speech and through presentation, what we would now call PR. For his efforts, Charles de Gaulle became a hero to the French people, guiding them through the darkest hours of their history. In the same way, this week, another man has become a national hate figure, almost directly as a result of his inability to communicate with people. Tony Heywood appears an unassuming man, his gentle, diffident manner characteristically British. He seems to lack the delicate turn of speech required under any onslaught of American media scrutiny. As the oil which his company has summoned from the belly of the earth gently laps at the beaches of Louisiana, The chief executive of BP has made insensitive gaffe after insensitive gaffe. Of course, Hayward bears little personal responsibility for this environmental disaster. But he must shoulder the burden of national and international rage at the gushing torrent released under the sea, stoked further by his own inability to see the problem. Hayward's failure, and the furious reaction to it, has dragged down another hero, that of the American left. This time it is Obama's tongue that has got him into trouble. A man normally so reliable at finding the right phrase, the rhetorical hand on the shoulder. Obama speaks in a discordant tone over the BP disaster. Anger is rarely an emotion that flatters politicians, and in this case his bullying calls scream of desperation to pass the flak. Pass it on to the corporate leaders, and well away from the Oval Office. The glowing reviews of a man with few imperfections are having to be reviewed. Perhaps this guy does have a temper after all. Perhaps the politics of Washington is getting to him, and he cannot any longer bear to take criticism. For many idealistic young people, this is a sad moment. We had pinned our hopes on the call for change. Now the dream is tainted. Not destroyed, but the otherwise perfectly smooth image has developed a grubby mark. Of course, this is an inherent danger of holding anybody up to be a hero. We choose what we want to see in them and elevate them for it. But as we do so, we start to see the grubby underside, which conflicts with our ideals, and we struggle to accommodate uncomfortable facts. General de Gaulle is hailed by the French as the father of their modern nation. But you don't hear them much talking about his handling of the Algerian crisis. Even Churchill, towering figure of British 20th century history, is not without his peccadilloes. Many of Churchill's failings have been well documented, but my favourite is his obsession for the elaborate efforts at humour. Planning arrangements for his own funeral, Churchill could not resist a final dig at the French, and in particular his old friend de Gaulle. After his state funeral at St. Paul's Cathedral in London, Churchill's body was to be taken by rail to Blenheim Palace in Oxfordshire. Now, even a most rudimentary understanding of the British rail network will tell the listener that the obvious stations to use would be Euston or Paddington, located, as they are, on the necessary side of London. Churchill, though, would have none of it, and instead a funereal barge was arranged to transport his body down the river to Waterloo Station, that grand architectural celebration of the British victory over the French in 1815. Why here? Well, Churchill knew, of course, that one of his pallbearers would be the French president. Who he, in 1965? Of course, one Charles de Gaulle.
That was A View from Nicholas Street, written and presented by James Townsend. For more episodes, visit jamestownsend.org.